His left hand held the curtain aside, and in the dark window she saw the reflection of the dozens of candles inside the room, trapped in the glass like fireflies. "Jace," she said. She heard her own voice as if from a distance, astonishment, gratitude, longing so sharp it was painful. He turned, dropping the curtain, and she saw the wondering look on his face. "Jace," she said again and ran toward him. He caught her as she flung herself at him, his arms wrapped tightly around her. "Clary." His voice was almost unrecognizable. "Clary, what are you doing here?" Her voice was muffled against his shirt.
"I came for you."
"You shouldn't have." His grip on her loosened suddenly. He stepped back, holding her a little away from him. "My God," he said, touching her face. "You idiot, what a thing to do." His voice was angry, but the gaze that swept her face, the fingers that gently brushed her hair back, were tender. She had never seen him look like this. There was a sort of fragility about him, as if he might be not just touched, but hurt even.
"Why don't you ever think?" he whispered.
"I was thinking," she said. "I was thinking about you."
He closed his eyes for a moment. "If anything had happened to you..." His hands traced the line of her arms gently down to her wrists as if to reassure himself that she was really there. "How did you find me?"
"Luke," she replied. "I came with Luke to rescue you."
Still holding her, he glanced from her face to the window, a slight frown curling the edge of his mouth. "So, those are... you came with the Wolf Clan?" he asked, an odd tone in his voice.
"Luke's," she said. "He's a werewolf, and I know."
Jace cut her off. "I should have guessed. The manacles." He glanced toward the door. "Where is he?"
"Downstairs," said Clary slowly.
"He killed Blackwell. I came up to look for you." "He's going to have to call them off," said Jace. She looked at him uncomprehendingly. "What?"
"Luke," said Jace. "He's going to have to call off his pack. There's been a misunderstanding."
"What? You kidnapped yourself?" She'd meant it to sound teasing, but her voice was too thin.
"Come on, Jace."
She yanked at his wrist, but he resisted. He was looking at her intently, and she realized with a jolt what she had not noticed in her first rush of relief. The last time she had seen him, he'd been cut and bruised, clothes stained with dirt and blood, his hair filthy with ichor and dust. Now he was dressed in a loose white shirt and dark pants, his scrubbed hair falling all around his face, pale gold and flyaway. He swept a few strands out of his eyes with a slim hand, and she saw that his heavy silver ring was back on his finger.
"Are those your clothes?" she asked, baffled.
"And you're all bandaged up." Her voice trailed off. "Valentine seems to be taking awfully good care of you." He smiled at her with a weary affection.
"If I told you the truth, you'd say I was crazy," he said.
She felt her heart flutter hard against the inside of her chest like a hummingbird's rapid wing beat.
"No, I wouldn't."
"My father gave me these clothes," he said. The flutter became a rapid pounding.
"Jace," she said carefully. "Your father is dead."
"No." He shook his head. She had the sense that he was holding back some enormous feeling, like horror or delight or both. "I thought he was, but he isn't. It's all been a mistake." She remembered what Hodge had said about Valentine and his ability to tell charming and convincing lies. "Is this something Valentine told you? Because he's a liar, Jace. Remember what Hodge said. If he's telling you your father is alive, it's a lie to get you to do what he wants."
"I've seen my father," said Jace. "I've talked to him. He gave me this."
He tugged on the new clean shirt, as if it were ineluctable proof.
"My father isn't dead. Valentine didn't kill him. Hodge lied to me. All those years I thought he was dead, but he wasn't."
Clary glanced around wildly at the room with its shining china and guttering torches and empty glaring mirrors.
"Well, if your father's really in this place, then where is he?" Did Valentine kidnap him too?
Jace's eyes were shining. The neck of his shirt was open, and she could see the thin white scars that covered his collarbone, like cracks in the smooth golden skin.
My father.
The door of the room, which Clary had shut behind her, opened with a creak, and a man walked into the room. It was Valentine. His silvery, close-cropped hair gleamed like a polished steel helmet, and his mouth was hard. He wore a waist sheath on his thick belt, and the hilt of a long sword protruded from the top of it.
So, he said, resting a hand on the hilt as he spoke, have you gathered your things? Our Forsaken can hold off the Wolfsmen for only so...
Seeing Clary, he broke off mid-sentence. He was not the sort of man who was ever really caught off guard, but she saw the flicker of astonishment in his eyes.
What is this?
He asked, turning his glance to Jace. But Clary was already fumbling at her waist for the dagger. She seized it by the hilt, jerking it out of its scabbard, and drew her hand back. Rage pounded behind her eyes like a drumbeat. She could kill this man. She would kill him. Jace caught at her wrist.
No!
She could not contain her disbelief.
But Jace!
Clary, he said firmly, this is my father. 23. Valentine.
I see I've interrupted something, said Valentine, his voice as dry as a desert afternoon. Son, would you care to tell me who this is? One of the Lightwood children, perhaps.
No, said Jace. He sounded tired and unhappy, but the hand on her wrist didn't loosen.
This is Clary. Clarissa Frey, she's a friend of mine. She...
Valentine's black eyes raked her slowly from the top of her disheveled head to the toes of her scuffed sneakers. They fastened on the dagger still gripped in her hand. An indefinable look passed over his face, part amusement, part irritation.
Where did you come by that blade, young lady?
Clary answered coldly. Jace gave it to me.
Of course he did, said Valentine. His tone was mild. May I see it?
No!
Clary took a step back as if she thought he might lunge at her, and felt the blade plucked neatly out of her fingers. Jace, holding the dagger, looked at her with an apologetic expression.
Jace,
she hissed, putting every ounce of the betrayal she felt into the single syllable of his name. All he said was, you still don't understand, Clary. With a sort of deferential care that made her feel sick to her stomach, he went to Valentine and handed him the dagger. Here you go, father. Valentine took the dagger in his big, long-boned hand and examined it. This is a Kindle, a Circassian dagger. This particular one used to be one of a matched pair. Here, see the star of the Morgansterns carved into the blade? He turned it over, showing it to Jace. I'm surprised the Lightwoods never noticed it.
I never showed it to them, said Jace. They let me have my own private things. They didn't pry.
Of course they didn't, said Valentine. He handed the Kindle back to Jace.
They thought you were Michael Whalen's son.
Jace, sliding the red-hilted dagger into his belt, looked up.
So did I, he said softly, and in that moment Clary saw that this was no joke, that Jace was not just playing along for his own purposes.
He really thought Valentine was his father returned to him. A cold despair was spreading through Clary's veins. Jace angry, Jace hostile, furious, she could have dealt with. But this new Jace, fragile and shining in the light of his own personal miracle, was a stranger to her. Valentine looked at her over Jace's tawny head. His eyes were cool with amusement.
Perhaps, he said, it would be a good idea for you to sit down now, Clary.
She crossed her arms stubbornly over her chest.
No.
As you like.
Valentine pulled out a chair and seated himself at the head of the table. After a moment, Jay sat down as well, beside a half-filled bottle of wine. But you are going to be hearing some things that might make you wish you had taken a chair.
I'll let you know, Clary told him, if that happens.
Very well.
Valentine sat back, his hands behind his head. The neck of his shirt gaped open a little, showing his scarred collarbones. Scarred, like his sons, like all the Nephilim. A life of scars and killing, Hodge had said. Clary, he said again, as if tasting the sound of her name. Short for Clarissa? Not a name I would have chosen. There was a grim curl to his lips. He knows I'm his daughter, Clary thought. Somehow he knows, but he isn't saying it. Why isn't he saying it? Because of Jace, she realized. Jace would think... She couldn't imagine what he would think. Valentine had seen them embracing when he'd walked in the door. He must know he had a devastating piece of information in his hands. Somewhere behind those fathomless black eyes, his sharp mind was clicking away rapidly, trying to decide how best to use what he knew. She cast another beseeching glance at Jace, but he was staring down at the wine glass by his left hand, half full of purplish-red liquid. She could see the rapid rise and fall of his chest as he breathed. He was more upset than he was letting on. I don't really care what you would have chosen, Clary said. I am sure, replied Valentine, leaning forward, that you don't. You're not Jace's father, she said. You're trying to trick us. Jace's father was Michael Wayland. The Lightwoods know it. Everyone knows it.
The Lightwoods were misinformed, said Valentine. They truly believe, that Jace is the son of their friend Michael, as does the Clave. Even the Silent Brothers do not know who he really is, although soon enough they will.
But the Wayland ring!
Ah, yes, said Valentine, looking at Jace's hand, where the ring glittered like snake scales. The ring. Funny, isn't it, how an M worn upside down resembles a W? Of course, if you'd bothered to think about it, you'd probably have thought it a little strange that the symbol of the Wayland family would be a falling star. Not at all strange that it would be the symbol of the Morgensterns. Clary stared. I have no idea what you mean.
I forget how regrettably lax mundane education is, Valentine said. Morgenstern means morning star, as in, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations?
A small shiver passed over Clary. He means Satan.
Or any great power lost, said Valentine, out of a refusal to serve, as mine was. I would not serve a corrupt government, and for that I lost my family, my lands, almost my life.
The uprising was your fault, snapped Clary. People died in it, shadow hunters like you.
Clary.
Jace leaned forward, nearly knocking over the glass at his elbow. Just listen to him, will you? It's not like you thought. Hodge lied to us.
I know, said Clary. He betrayed us to Valentine. He was Valentine's pawn.
No, said Jace.
No, Hodge was the one who wanted the mortal cup all along. He was the one who sent the Raveners after your mother.
My father. Valentine only found out about it afterward and came to stop him. He brought your mother here to heal her, not to hurt her.
And you believe that crap? Clary said in disgust.
It isn't true. Hodge was working for Valentine. They were in it together getting the cup. He set us up, it's true, but he was just a tool.
But he was the one who needed the mortal cup, said Jace, so he could get the curse off him and flee before my father told the Clave about everything he'd done.
I know that isn't true, said Clary hotly. I was there.
She turned on Valentine. I was in the room when you came to get the cup. You couldn't see me, but I was there.
I saw you. You took the cup and lifted the curse off Hodge. He couldn't have done it by himself. He said so.
I did lift his curse, said Valentine measuredly, but I was moved by pity. He seemed so pathetic.
You didn't feel pity. You didn't feel anything. That's enough, Clary.
It was Jace. She stared at him. His cheeks were flushed as if he'd been drinking the wine at his elbow, his eyes too bright.
Don't talk to my father like that. He's not your father.
Jace looked as if she had slapped him.
Why are you so determined not to believe us?
Because she loves you, said Valentine. Clary felt the blood drain out of her face. She looked at him, not knowing what he might say next, but dreading it. She felt as if she were edging toward a precipice, some terrible, hurtling fall into nothing and nowhere. Vertigo gripped her stomach. What? Jace looked surprised. Valentine was looking at Clary with amusement, as if he could tell he had had her pinned there like a butterfly to a board. She fears I am taking advantage of you, he said, that I have brainwashed you. It isn't so, of course. If you looked into your own memories, Clary, you would know it. Clary, Jace started to get to his feet, his eyes on her. She could see the circles beneath them, the strain he was under.
Sit down, said Valentine. Let her come to it on her own, Jonathan.
Jace subsided instantly, sinking back into the chair. Through the dizziness of vertigo, Clary groped for understanding. Jonathan?
I thought your name was Jace, she said. Did you lie about that too?
No. Jace is a nickname. She was very near to the precipice now, so close she could almost look down.
For what?
He looked at her as if he couldn't understand why she was making so much of something so small. It's my initials, he said. J.C. The precipice opened before her. She could see the long fall into darkness.
Jonathan, she said faintly. Jonathan Christopher.
Jace's eyebrows drew together. How did you... Valentine cut in. His voice was soothing.
Jace, I had thought to spare you. I thought a story of a mother who died would hurt you less than the story of a mother who abandoned you before your first birthday.
Jace's slim fingers tightened convulsively around the glass's stem. Clary thought for a moment that it might shatter.
My mother is alive?
She is, said Valentine. Alive and asleep in one of the downstairs rooms at this very moment.
Yes, he said, cutting off Jace before he could speak.
Jocelyn is your mother, Jonathan, and Clary?
Clary is your sister.
Jace jerked his hand back. The wine glass tipped, spilling frothy scarlet liquid across the white tablecloth.
Jonathan, said Valentine.
Jace had gone an awful color, a sort of greenish-white.
That's not true, he said. There's been a mistake. It couldn't possibly be true.
Valentine looked steadily at his son.
A cause for rejoicing, he said in a low, contemplative voice. I would have thought.
Yesterday you were an orphan, Jonathan, and now a father, a mother, a sister you never knew you had.
It isn't possible, said Jace again. Clary isn't my sister. If she were,
then what? Valentine said.
Jace did not reply, but his sick look of nauseous horror was enough for Clary.
Stumbling a little, she came around the table and knelt beside his chair, reaching for his hand.
Jace.
He jerked away from her, his fingers knotting in the sodden tablecloth.
Don't.
Hatred for Valentine burned in her throat like unshed tears. He held back, and by not saying what he knew, that she was his daughter, made her complicit in his silence. And now, having dropped the truth on them with the weight of a crushing boulder, he sat back to watch the results with a cool consideration. How could Jace not see how hateful he was?
Tell me it's not true, Jace said, staring at the tablecloth.
Clary swallowed against the burning in her throat.
I can't do that.
Valentine sounded as if he were smiling.
So you admit now that I've been telling the truth all this time?
No, she shot back without looking at him. You're telling lies with a little bit of the truth mixed in, is all.
This grows tiresome, said Valentine. If you want to hear the truth, Clarissa, this is the truth. You have heard stories of the uprising, and so you think I'm a villain, is that correct?
Clary said nothing. She was looking at Jace, who seemed as if he might be about to throw up. Valentine went on relentlessly.
It is simple, really. The story you heard was true in some of its parts, but not in others. Lies mixed in with a little truth, as you said. The fact is that Michael Wayland is not, and has never been, Jace's father.
Wayland was killed during the uprising. I assumed Michael's name and place when I fled the Glass City with my son. It was easy enough. Wayland had no real relations, and his closest friends, the Lightwoods, were in exile. He himself would have been in disgrace for his part in the uprising. So I lived that disgraced life, quietly enough, alone with Jace on the Wayland's estate. I read my books, I raised my son, and I bided my time. He fingered the filigreed edge of a glass thoughtfully. He was left-handed, Clary saw, like Jace. 10 years on, I received a letter. The writer of the letter indicated that he knew my true identity, and if I were not prepared to take certain steps, he would reveal it. I did not know who the letter was from, but it did not matter. I was not prepared to give the writer of it what he wanted. Besides, I knew my safety was compromised and would be unless he thought me dead, beyond his reach. I staged my death a second time with the help of Blackwell and Pangborn, and for Jace's own safety made sure that my son would be sent here, to the protection of the Lightwoods. So you let Jace think you were dead? You just let him think you were dead all these years? That's despicable. Don't, said Jace again. He had raised his hands to cover his face. He spoke against his own fingers, voice muffled. Don't, Clary. Valentine looked at his son with a smile Jace couldn't see. Jonathan had to think I was dead, yes. He had to think he was Michael Wayland's son, or the Lightwoods would not have protected him as they did. It was Michael they owed a debt to, not me. It was on Michael's account that they loved him, not mine. Maybe they loved him on his own account, said Clary. A commendably sentimental interpretation, said Valentine, but unlikely. You do not know the Lightwoods as I once did. He did not seem to see Jace's flinch, or if he did, he ignored it. It hardly matters in the end, Valentine added. The Lightwoods were intended as protection for Jace, not as a replacement family, you see. He has a family. He has a father. Jace made a noise in his throat and moved his hands away from his face. My mother fled after the uprising, said Valentine. I was a disgraced man. The Clave would have hunted me down had they thought I lived. She could not bear her association with me and ran. The pain in his voice was palpable and faked, Clary thought bitterly, the manipulative creep. I did not know she was pregnant at that time. With Clary. He smiled a little, running his finger slowly down the wine glass. But blood calls to blood, as they say, he went on. Fate has borne us to this convergence. Our family, together again. We can use the portal, he said, turning his gaze to Jace. Go to Idris, back to the manor house. Jace shivered a little but nodded, still staring numbly at his hands. We'll be together there, said Valentine, as we should be. That sounds terrific, thought Clary. Just you, your comatose wife, your shell-shocked son, and your daughter, who hates your guts. Not to mention that your two kids may be in love with each other. Yeah, that sounds like a perfect family reunion. Aloud, she said only, I'm not going anywhere with you, and neither is my mother. He's right, Clary, said Jace hoarsely. He flexed his hands. The fingertips were stained red. It's the only place for us to go. We can sort things out there. You can't be serious. An enormous crash came from downstairs, so loud that it sounded as if a wall of the hospital had collapsed in on itself. Luke, Clary thought, springing to her feet. Jace, despite his look of nauseous horror, responded automatically. Half rising from his chair, his hand going to his belt. Father, they're on their way. Valentine rose to his feet. Clary heard footsteps. A moment later, the door of the room was flung open and Luke stood on the threshold. Clary bit back a cry. He was covered in blood, his jeans and shirt dark and clotted, the lower half of his face bearded with it. His hands were red to the wrists, the blood that coated them still wet and running. She had no idea if any of the blood was his. She heard herself cry out his name, and then she was running across the room to him and nearly tripping over herself in her eagerness to grab at his shirt front and hang on the way she hadn't done since she was 8 years old. For a moment, his big hand came up and cupped the back of her head, holding her against him in a one-armed bear hug. Then he pushed her away gently.
"I'm all over blood," he said. "Don't worry, it isn't mine."
"Then whose is it?" It was Valentine's voice, and Clary turned, Luke's arm protectively across her shoulders. Valentine was watching them both, his eyes narrow and calculating. Jace had risen to his feet and come around the table and was standing hesitantly behind his father. Clary could not remember him ever doing anything hesitantly before.
"Pangborns," said Luke.
Valentine passed a hand over his face as if the news pained him.
"I see. Did you tear out his throat with your teeth?"
"Actually," said Luke, "I killed him with this." With his free hand, he held out the long, thin dagger he had killed the Forsaken with. In the light, she could see the blue stones in the hilt.
"Do you remember it?"
Valentine looked at it, and Clary saw his jaw tighten.
"I do," he said, and Clary wondered if he, too, were remembering their earlier conversation.
"This is a Kinjal, a Circassian dagger. This particular one used to be one of a matched pair."
"You handed it to me 17 years ago and told me to end my life with it," said Luke, the weapon gripped tightly in his hand. The blade of it was longer than the blade of the red-hilted Kinjal in Jace's belt. It was somewhere between a dagger and a sword, and its blade was needle-tipped.
"And I nearly did."
"Do you expect me to deny it?"
There was pain in Valentine's voice, the memory of an old grief.
"I tried to save you from yourself, Lucian. I made a grave mistake. If only I'd had the strength to kill you myself, you could have died a man."
"Like you?" asked Luke. And in that moment, Clary saw something in him of the Luke she'd always known, who could tell when she was lying or pretending, who called her on it when she was being arrogant or untruthful. In the bitterness of his voice, she heard the love he'd once had for Valentine, curdled into a weary hatred. "A man who chains his unconscious wife to a bed in the hopes of torturing her for information when she wakes up? That's your bravery?" Jace was staring at his father. Clary saw the seizure of anger that momentarily twisted Valentine's features. Then it was gone, and his face was smooth.
"I didn't torture her," he said. "She is chained for her own protection."
"Against what?" Luke demanded, stepping farther into the room. "The only thing endangering her is you. The only thing that has ever endangered her was you. She spent her life running to get away from you."
"I loved her," said Valentine. "I never would have hurt her. It was you who turned her against me."
Luke laughed. "She didn't need me to turn her against you. She learned to hate you on her own."
"That is a lie!"
Valentine roared with sudden savagery and drew his sword from the sheath at his waist. The blade was flat and matte black, patterned with the design of silver stars. He leveled the blade at Luke's heart. Jace took a step toward Valentine.
"Father!"
"Jonathan, be silent!" shouted Valentine, but it was too late. Clary saw the shock on Luke's face as he stared at Jace.
"Jonathan?" he whispered.
Jace's mouth twisted. "Don't you call me that," he said fiercely, his gold eyes blazing. "I'll kill you myself if you call me that." Luke, ignoring the blade pointed at his heart, didn't take his eyes off Jace.
"Your mother would be proud,"
he said so quietly that even Clary, standing beside him, had to strain to hear it.
"I don't have a mother," said Jace. His hands were shaking.
"The woman who gave birth to me walked away from me before I learned to remember her face. I was nothing to her, so she is nothing to me."
"Your mother is not the one who walked away from you," said Luke, his gaze moving slowly to Valentine.
"I would have thought even you," he said slowly, "were above using your own flesh and blood as bait. I suppose I was wrong."
"That's enough."
Valentine's tone was almost languid, but there was a fierceness in it, a hungry threat of violence.
"Let go of my daughter or I'll kill you where you stand."
"I'm not your daughter," said Clary fiercely, but Luke pushed her away from him so hard that she nearly fell.
"Get out of here," he said. "Get to where it's safe."
"I'm not leaving you."
"Clary, I mean it. Get out of here."
Luke was already lifting his dagger.
"This is not your fight."
Clary stumbled away from him toward the door that led to the landing. Maybe she could run for help for Alaric. Then Jace was in front of her, blocking her way to the door.